From Rotary Magazine, this is the Rotary Voices podcast. I'm Steve Edwards. On July 1st, 2022, Canada's Jennifer Jones broke the glass ceiling by becoming Rotary International's first woman president. But she wasn't the only one doing the glass breaking. Her husband, Nick Krajicich, became the first gentleman in Rotary's 119-year-old history. While much attention has been paid to women assuming leadership roles traditionally occupied by men, what happens when a man takes over a role historically held by a woman? We can't help compare Nick to Doug Emhoff, who broke historical gender boundaries in 2021 when he became the first second gentleman of the United States. Like Emhoff, Nick defines the role of a first gentleman in Rotary. He's a member of the Rotary Club of LaSalle Centennial in Ontario, Canada. A family physician, Nick also owned a medical center and directed a nursing home in the region. During Jennifer's tenure as president, he took a year off to assist his wife as they traveled around the world to visit Rotary projects and inspire Rotarians. Nick shares his adventures and advice in the recent issue of Rotary Magazine. In this episode, Rotary Magazine's senior editor Jeff Johnson takes us deeper into Nick's year as Rotary's first gentleman. But first, Linda Yu brings us the Rotary Roundup.
Welcome to the Rotary Roundup, where we recap the latest news, events, acts of service, and milestones in the Rotary community. I'm Linda Yu. Today, we focus on peace. Rotary International has announced its partnership with a university in Turkey to establish a fellowship program at the Otto and Fran Walter Rotary Peace Center. 40 students will have a chance to become Rotary Peace Fellows and spend an academic year at the future campus of the Bahçeşehir University outside of Istanbul. Martha Peek-Helmand of the Rotary Peace Center in Turkey says the programs will bring together peacemakers from across the Middle East and North Africa. Fellowship would include academic studies, field visits, seminars, and workshops offered by the United Nations Institute for Training and Research. Students will use their experience to implement a 9-month social change project within the region. Applicants should have experience working with local community organizations or have participated in peace-building projects. Currently, Rotary has 7 peace centers in various locations around the world, including Thailand, Uganda, Australia, and Sweden. Each year, the organization awards up to 130 fully funded fellowships to study at one of its 7 peace center programs. Over the past 19 years, Rotary Peace Centers have trained more than 1,700 individuals for careers in peacebuilding in more than 140 countries. The Rotary Peace Center program is now accepting applications for the 2025-26 academic year. The deadline is the 15th of May, 2024. Please contact your local Rotary clubs for more information. Rotary Peace Park. One more reason to attend the Rotary International Convention in Singapore this May, a huge peace park will be created at the convention site in Singapore, sponsored by the Rotary Action Group for Peace. Rotarians from around the world will be able to remove their thoughts from the wars and unrest going on in the world and turn their thoughts towards peace-building goals.
There's no limit to our potential in Rotary for peacebuilding, and hopefully the Peace Park will allow some people to try to find that potential.
Ray Matsumiya, who is organizing the installation and is director of Rotary Initiatives at the Jubitz Family Foundation, points out the soothing serenity of the Peace Park, along with something more.
We set up something called the Peace Pod. It's this kind of inflatable dome that holds around 12 to 15 people. People go in and they soothe their 5 senses.
Soothing by taking off their shoes, putting on noise-canceling headphones, listening to calming music, breathing the scent of aromatics, and, because it's Singapore, enjoying a tasty treat as they walk out of the pod. The last day for the pre-registration discount for this year's convention is March 31st. Go to convention.rotary.org/en-us/registration. Rotary Camp. In the lush green mountains of Zakopane, Poland, Ukrainian children are laughing and playing. There are no bomb shelters to run to, no sounds of missiles overhead. It's Rotary Camp for the children of Ukraine. Rotary Camp began 10 years ago after the Russian annexation of Crimea, and in the last 2 years, Ukrainian children have needed this camp and the peace it can offer even more. Rotary clubs in Poland, Germany, Belgium, and the U.S. have all contributed support. In Zakopane, youngsters hike in the wilderness, play games outside, jump into swimming pools. Ukrainian psychologists listen to them, work with them, talk about their fears.
The first day we are going to the shop, we are buying them proper shoes. If they are hungry, they come down to the kitchen anytime just to eat something.
That's Piotr Jankowski, a recent district governor in Poland and Rotary Foundation chair. He's already seen more than 650 children, ages 7 to 12, come to the camp for their 2.5 week respite.
There are children that adapt very quickly, but there are also children they cannot adapt so quickly.
He has seen children so traumatized by war, they don't even reach out for the candy offered them when they arrive. As the war continues to upend the children's lives, the support of the international Rotary community is ever more critical. One session has just been completed. Two more are coming up in April and May. A concert will be held at the Silesian Philharmonic in Katowice, Poland, on August 24th, which is Ukrainian Independence Day. All proceeds from the concert will go towards supporting Rotary Camp. A website for tickets and donations will be online soon.
We cannot change the whole world, but we can change the whole world for one family, for one child.
That wraps up this edition of Rotary Roundup. If you have a story you'd like us to highlight, feel free to share your idea at magazine@rotary.org. I'm Linda Yu. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to the Rotary Voices podcast. I'm Steve Edwards. Senior editor Jeff Johnson now takes us inside the world of Rotary International's first gentleman, Nick Krajicich. Nick assumed that role in 2022 when his wife Jennifer Jones became Rotary's first female president. Jeff and Nick began their conversation with the story of how Nick and Jennifer first met in the Caribbean island of Turks and Caicos.
Nick, thank you for joining us today on the Rotary Voices podcast. It's great to catch up with you and talk about your term as Rotary's first gentleman. To begin, can you please tell us how you and Jennifer met?
Well, thanks, Jeffrey. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Jennifer and I met. It was quite an interesting story. I was in Toronto finishing up my medical internship, and I was looking to go on a scuba diving vacation, and my travel agent said, why don't you go to the Turks and Caicos Islands? They have a Club Med there, and it's some of the best diving in the world. So I booked the travel and went down to the Turks. Jennifer was working at Club Med. She was a hostess and performer, and we had never met each other before. Probably we wouldn't have met each other in Windsor, Ontario. She was from one side of the city, I was from the other. So I ended up meeting Jennifer while I was down in the Turks and Caicos Islands. We struck up a friendship, and probably 3 to 4 years later, we ended up getting married, and that's where our journey began.
You're telling me two of Rotary's most famous Canadians did not meet in Canada.
That is true. We had to go all the way to the Caribbean island of Turks and Caicos to meet.
How did you first get involved with Rotary?
The beginnings of my Rotary journey were really with Jennifer. Jennifer joined the Rotary Club of Windsor-Roseland, I think in around 1997. Jennifer says she found her home when she joined Rotary. And so all of the events that she ran and participated in, she brought me to all of them. And so I really became part of Rotary, even though I didn't wear the official pin. And 10 years later, I ended up joining Rotary myself. And the biggest probably impression on my life of Rotary is that she arranged for her and I to do a international Rotary mission in the Brazilian Amazon. We had friends of ours who were running a medical dental educational clinic in the Amazon, way up in the north of Brazil. they relied on volunteer physicians to run their clinic. So I went down and ran the clinic for 5 weeks. And during those 5 weeks, getting to know the Rotarians in the Amazon and treating patients, you know, who relied on volunteers who came from as far as 14 hours away by foot, by bus, by boat, by taxi. And it was a very humbling experience. I would say during that trip that I actually became a Rotarian. That was my Rotary moment when I realized the power that Rotary had globally with partnerships and service. That was, I think, one of the best moments, I think, in my early Rotary life.
Let's fast forward a little, Nick. In 2020, Jennifer was elected president of Rotary International, meaning she would become the first woman to serve in that role. How did you feel when Jennifer got the news?
I was just as excited for her as I was for the organization as a whole, because I think it really was a statement to our organization. And it really showed that Rotary was putting their actions behind their words. For several years prior, all the senior leaders had been saying, you know, we need younger, diverse leadership to show our Rotary world that people of different backgrounds and ages can take on leadership in Rotary roles. And I think it meant a lot to people who maybe didn't look like our leadership of the past. So I was so excited for her because she lives, breathes, and eats Rotary. For the past 20 years, she's pretty much given up her life for the organization, and gladly so.
Jennifer was chosen as Rotary's president. What decisions did you make regarding your profession as a medical doctor?
Like you said, Jeff, I'm a family doctor or primary care physician, as some other people know it by. And I had been practicing for just over 30 years at that point. And COVID had hit and changed the world. So I was doing primary care basically over the telephone. And on top of that, I was also the medical director of a 160-bed long-term healthcare facility, or as other people know it, a nursing home. And that was probably the most stressful time of my entire career. And this was before vaccines happened. And my particular nursing home lost about 80 people died. We were wearing the equivalent of hazmat suits. Patients were dying alone in their room, maybe if they had an iPad or could see their relative out of their window. It was probably the saddest, hardest thing I've had to go through in my medical career. And frankly, at that time, I was getting burnt out, both in family practice and in the nursing home. So we had decided that if Jennifer was chosen, I would take a 2-year sabbatical from my profession. And I thought that journey with Rotary would energize my batteries and give me back a little juice in my life. And Jennifer and I don't have children. Our child is our dog, Gracie. And for Jennifer, if I continued to work, I don't think it really would have been fair for her to travel around the world for 2 years without the support of her partner or her husband. And it's difficult traveling the globe by yourself. And I didn't want to miss out on this opportunity either. And so this opportunity couldn't have come at a better time.
You already touched on this, but maybe you could tell us a little more. What did you think your role would be as Rotary's first gentleman?
Well, thanks for that, Jeff. I had already figured out in my own mind that my role was going to be her support and her rock. I knew that all of the spotlight was going to be on her, and rightfully so. She's an amazing leader and a servant leader and a kind, compassionate leader. So I knew that my job was not going to be to take center stage or, you know, take any of the light away from her.
During the year leading up to Jen's presidency and during her term as Rotary president, it seemed like you and Jennifer were constantly on the go. How many countries did you end up visiting?
During her year as president, we visited around 57 countries. It was incredible. For those of you who don't know, the president of Rotary lives in Evanston, Illinois, where Rotary's headquarters are at. And we have a condo that we live in. And I think during that year, I think we were in Evanston for no more than maybe 3 weeks. So that was an amazing, exhausting, exhilarating experience.
The fact that you were in 57 different countries, was there some sort of routine to your travels?
There was, Jeff. Jennifer's theme that year was Imagine Rotary. So she planned our travel on the Imagine Impact Tour, which was basically using our seven areas of focus, plus the eighth, which was all about polio. And so the travel was based on high impact, sustainable projects based on each of those areas of focus. So for example, we based our polio trip and we went to Pakistan. And we went into the slums of Karachi. In Pakistan, the men are not allowed to go into the homes where the women and their children are. And Jennifer was the first president of Rotary International ever to be able to go into these homes of these families with the female healthcare workers in Pakistan to immunize children. And her primary reason was to say thank you to these female healthcare workers who give up their life for this job. You know, in the emergency operation headquarters, they have a wall of martyrs. There's been over, I think, around approximately 64 women and men who have been killed by insurgents doing this job. And so Jennifer really wanted to go there and say thank you to these workers and go into the field with them and show solidarity with them.
Nick, in many of the places you went, Jennifer was greeted like a rock star. What was that like?
Well, you know, Jeff, it was something we've never experienced before. There were banners strewn across the airport. We would get out of the airport doors and there would literally be several hundred people with cameras. And so, you know, we would often be met by 400 or 500 screaming, excited Rotarians all wanting to shake Jennifer's hands and meet her. And then she would be giving several media interviews. You really felt like a Rotary rock star with the cameras going off. In Hollywood, they have the paparazzi. In Rotary, we have the Rotarazzi. And that was ongoing throughout all of our travels across the globe. And in a lot of the countries, the president of Rotary International is considered a state VIP. And so we would be escorted by 4 or 5 armed guards in front of us in a truck with machine guns. And then we'd have another vehicle in front of us and our vehicle, another armed vehicle behind us, and then an ambulance, which I was always shocked by. But apparently they knew our blood type. And, you know, I remember traveling through the highways in Africa, traveling on the wrong side of the road with the guards waving out the window, wearing a white glove, waving traffic frantically to move aside for us. And that was crazy. I'd never driven on the other side of a freeway in my entire life. In Pakistan, we had armed guards with us when Jen was giving immunizations. And 2 hours later, the security said, we have to leave. Insurgents have found out we're here and it's dangerous. And that was the only time in our 2 years that actually I was ever scared. But we were extricated out of that area and got back to where we were safely. Because of her historic nature, being the first female president, literally she was mobbed. I mean, there would be 100 people surrounding her. And if we were walking to a dinner event, people would often forget about the partner because they were so excited to see her and they would swarm around here and I would kind of be left behind, you know, 50 feet, 100 feet. And it really never bothered me because I really knew that Jen was the major focal point of this. But after a couple of these, the inevitable would happen. They have to take a picture with Jennifer and I. And then, of course, they realize, where's Nick? There's literally about 500 people I have to wade through. And I felt like a weakened salmon swimming upstream to get to this obligatory photograph. I smiled as I was supposed to, but I found it a little bit comical. But all in all, rolled along with everything, and it was an amazing experience.
Nick, you visited Turkey in the aftermath of the earthquakes that devastated that country early in 2023. What was that experience like?
We wanted to go to Turkey and show the people and the Rotarians of Turkey that Rotary cares and that we are there for them. We went out to this area called Adıyaman, which is one of the worst hit areas of the earthquake. It was literally like being in a war zone, and not that I've ever been in a war zone, but what I've seen on television, buildings collapsed, rubble and cement everywhere, people's belongings strewn about amidst the horrors of this earthquake. We met this amazing gentleman. His name was Ferit. And he is a Rotarian from Adıyaman. And despite him losing 42 members of his family in this earthquake, he rolled up his shirt sleeves and got a whole team of Rotarians and people from the city and started building shelter tents, container cities, medical supplies, personal supplies for thousands and thousands of people in this area. And they took us on a tour of the tent city where we saw all of these displaced people, and Rotary supplied a lot of the basic needs for them, tents. And then we went over to the container city, and they were literally using like shipping containers that had been converted into houses. They had a bedroom, a kitchen, a washing facility, and there were hundreds and hundreds of these containers. And on each one of them had a plaque of the Rotary clubs from around the world that had donated money to supply the funds for these containers. And there was a brand new medical facility in this container city with brand new equipment that these folks were going to be able to access medical care. And it was really, really touching and really humbling to hear the individual stories of people who had been affected by this earthquake. And I think for us just to be there in solidarity with them and to give them hugs and to show that we care, and that the disaster relief fund that Rotary has was supplying literally millions of dollars to come into this particular area. It was a really one of the most touching parts of that whole year. I will never forget that trip and the resolve and the kindness of people in that country.
Anyone who's met Jennifer also knows that she's a hugger. Tell us a little bit about some of those experiences you might have seen during her term as president.
She is naturally a very warm, loving person. I've been in several rooms where, you know, she's asked people, listen, if I've ever given you a hug, put up your hand. And literally most of the events, everyone puts up their hand. And that's just her nature. Even with the heads of state across the globe, by the end of the visit, every one of them has embraced and given her a hug. It was Commonwealth Week. And we were fortunate enough to get invited to a reception for the Commonwealth countries at Buckingham Palace. And we had a chance to actually meet King Charles III and Camilla, the Queen Consort. Many people may or may not know, but King Charles III is an honorary Rotarian and very proud to be one. And so when he found out Jen was there, she was the president of Rotary National, he reached out his hand to shake her hand and say hello. There's supposed to be a royal protocol where you're not supposed to touch the monarch. And then Jen had kind of touched his arm gently with the other hand. And so in the picture, we had several comments from people around the world saying, my gosh, that you broke royal protocol. And Jennifer says, well, he started it. He did it first. And in a very lighthearted, kidding manner. But I think if the opportunity arose, Jennifer definitely would have hugged the king, but she just wants to let you know that she cares about you, and that human connection is important to her.
Nick, you and Jennifer had an especially touching encounter with Pope Francis at the Vatican. Can you tell us a little bit about that encounter?
A very good Rotarian, a friend of ours, Mr. Alberto Cecchini, he is Rotary's liaison to the Vatican. And so he was able to get Jennifer and I and several other Rotarians seats to an outdoor mass at the Vatican. Jen and I were fortunate enough to sit in the front row in front of the Pope. When he's done mass, he will come and greet people in the first row. And I've always really admired Pope Francis. I think he's a real genuine humanitarian. And the Pope is also an honorary Rotarian. So we were very fortunate to spend maybe 2 or 3 minutes with him. And he was just out of the hospital, I think, several weeks earlier for a medical condition. So he looked a little bit frail. And so Jennifer was chatting with him and said, Your Holiness, on behalf of the 1.4 million Rotarians around the world, we're wishing you good health and good fortune, and we're praying for you. And it says, please thank all the Rotarians around the world, and please ask all the Rotarians to pray for my health. That was a very special moment for both of us.
Nick, you spoke earlier about how you understood this was Jennifer's moment and that you had no trouble letting her command the spotlight. There was one occasion, however, in Grenada, where Jennifer fell ill and you had to step in for her. How did that go?
We were in Barbados, and the governor of that area happened to be from Grenada, and he asked if we would come and Jennifer give a lunchtime speech to all of the Rotarians on the island of Grenada. So we said, yes. Yeah. So we got on a little small plane. And we flew there, and it was very hot that day. And I think we got there maybe an hour or two prior to the meeting. And everyone wanted to greet and say hello to Jennifer. And so she was hugging everyone. And I think what happened is she didn't drink enough water and she started feeling ill. And this is about 20 minutes before she's about to go on. And then she said, I need to sit down. I feel like I'm going to pass out. Well, she did have heat stroke. So I took her to a private room and told everyone there, you know, I'm her personal physician and we need to get some ice packs on her and cool her down. And Jen said, I don't think I can give my speech because it was literally only 10 minutes away. And I had heard her speech so many times over the year. I pretty much had it memorized. And she said, well, Nick, you know my speech better than anyone. Would you prepare to give it? And I said, sure. So I got up and said, you know, Jennifer's not feeling well, but she'll be okay. And so I proceeded to give her speech. And I think I did an okay job. And I put her touches on it and gave her message. And, you know, they always say that past district governors are like an old tennis shoe. They're all worn out except for the tongue. And I actually kind of enjoyed the microphone. So maybe that was a good omen for me being a district governor, liking the microphone, maybe a little bit too much. But anyway, the good news was Jen recovered. She was able to come back and give another 10 or 15 minute speech and welcome everyone. So at the end of the day, I was really more grateful that she was okay and that I was able to fill in for her. And that's truly being a team.
Nick, clearly there were advantages to Jennifer for her to be traveling with her personal physician. I wonder, given all the stress and the demands of your 2 years of travel, were there any perks on your side for the first gentleman?
I think the biggest perk for me was obviously meeting all these fantastic Rotarians around the world. I always say, for me, every meeting and every event we went to, I left with more friends than when I came with. And that's the biggest perk of our organization is the friendships and fellowships and connections that were afforded. On a lighter note, many people don't know, but one of my passions is to play golf. And on the odd day where Jen was busy, maybe with meetings that I didn't really need to be there, the Rotarians were so kind, they would take me and for a round of golf. When we were in Tokyo, they had arranged for me to play golf at this very prestigious golf club where they actually had the last Summer Olympics. One of the Rotarians was a member. I got up early in the morning to take a taxi. It was about an hour outside of Tokyo. It was one of these magical moments. Mount Fuji was clear as day, and there was this mystical mist that was coming off of the ground. I was playing with this elder Rotarian, and I said, you know, Masahiko, what do you do for a living? And he says, I've got this cosmetics company. I said, oh, well, that's great. What's the name of this company? And he said, oh, the name of my company is Shiseido. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's nice. I mean, I don't know anything about cosmetics or anything like that. So here I am not knowing anything. I says, is it a good company? Do you do okay with it? And I think, you know, the Japanese culture is so respectful and modest. He says, well, you know, I do okay. Yeah, you know, it's been a good business for me. And he was the nicest guy. And we had lunch afterward. So afterwards, when I got back to the hotel room and I was talking with Jennifer, I said, he owns this company called Shiseido. Have you ever heard of it? And Jen said, Shiseido, are you kidding me? It's one of my favorite brands in the whole world. She says, why didn't you get samples? And so unbeknownst to me, Shiseido was like, I think, one of the top three cosmetic companies in the world. So anyway, we had a chance to meet him later that night at a Rotarian dinner, and I got to introduce Jennifer to him.
I understand there was also a moment that was tailor-made for you in Bangladesh, if you will.
Oh, that's a good pun, Jeffrey. So we were in Bangladesh for several days and big Rotary meetings and gala dinners, etc., and we arrived late, I think around midnight, and we had a 9 or 10 a.m. meeting the next morning. So we get to the hotel room, and there's a guy in the room. I'm going, what the heck? What's there? They said, oh, it's a tailor. He wants to make a purple suit for you because all the governors from this area are going to be wearing their purple jackets and suits tomorrow because, you know, they want to be in solidarity with Jennifer. And Jennifer's colors, for those of you who may or may not know, for her year as president were purple, green, and white. They are the colors of the women's movement. And so it was a subtle nod to all the female leaders that came before Jennifer to make way for her and other women in the organization to thrive and prosper. And so the tailor, by 2 a.m., he had measured me up. By 9 a.m., there was a knock on the door, and there was the purple suit that I was fitted. It fit perfect. All the other folks who were wearing all their purple dresses and jackets, we all fit in. And a matter of fact, I think you'll see me in the Rotary magazine and photos. That's the purple suit that I've been wearing across the globe.
For the record, Nick, you and Jennifer were married in Windsor, Ontario, 26 years ago. And to make sure it took, you repeated the ceremony at the Rotary International Convention in Seoul in 2016. And yet, during Jennifer's year as president, you went through two more wedding ceremonies. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, especially the circumstances of your marriage ceremony in Pune, India?
Yeah, another amazing experience that was really unexpected. We're in Pune, and one of the directors on Jennifer's board that year was Dr. Mahesh Kotbagi. And he had said to Jen and I, you know, I'd like to take you to a real traditional Rajasthani wedding. And so we said, oh, that'd be great. And so around 5:30 p.m., up comes this horse-drawn carriage. They decorated with flowers and garland and the horses all dressed up. So we got in and we clip-clopped across the road to the hotel where the meeting was at. Well, there was a sign in front of the hotel that said, welcome to the wedding of Jennifer Jones and Nick Krayasich. So they dressed us up in traditional Rajasthani garb. I was in like a turban-style hat, and it was all bejeweled, and this big fancy bejeweled jacket and pants and these pointy shoes. And they did the same to Jennifer, put her in this amazing sari. And for the next 45 minutes to an hour, we went through all the 7 or 8 rituals and rites. The Hindu priests were there. There was spices and fire and burning of incense. And it was actually pretty amazing to go through that cultural experience. And then after that, we had a gala dinner and Jen gave a speech. And I said, Mahesh, you were pretty sneaky, but thank you very much for that, because it was an opportunity of a lifetime.
As you alluded to earlier, on July 1st, you'll become the governor of Rotary's District 6400, which has clubs in Ontario and Michigan. And that means Jennifer will, in effect, become the district's first lady. Have you and Jennifer discussed how you might approach this change in roles?
We have. And she, again, has told me whatever I need, she's there for me. We were at the International Assembly in January, where all the district governor-elects go for their final training. And Jennifer went to the partner programs, and she embraced the program, and she got to meet all kinds of the partners and just dove in headfirst, you know, as a partner. And that's the person she is. And so I couldn't be more grateful to have her in my life.
I do have to wonder, is this when you get payback for all that luggage you slept across 6 continents for the better part of 2 years?
Yeah, that could be. I always facetiously said I was the Rotary mule the last couple of years. You know, I ended up getting a tennis elbow from lugging hers and mine luggage up and down from luggage racks on planes. But I would gladly take tennis elbow for the experience any day. I won't make Jennifer lug any heavy objects, but I'm definitely going to have her do some heavy lifting when it comes to motivating and getting me world-class speakers at my conferences and helping me with my district training. So yes, there will be a little bit of payback, and she's glad to do it. We've had a big laugh about that. So we're in it together.
And if I could ask you, do you have any advice for Rotary's future first gentleman?
We are in a supportive role, and you can't underestimate that role. Sometimes we are the only person that the president can vet their frustrations or their feelings, because when they're out in the public eye, they can't really share those feelings. Whether you have a partner, a spouse, a husband, it could be a friend, it could be a colleague, it just makes it so much easier.
Nick, we spent the last few minutes talking about some of the fun highlights of your time with Jennifer during her year as president, but we began on a more serious note talking about the different moments in which you saw Rotary in action around the world. I wonder, now that those experiences are behind you, what are your feelings about Rotary? Have they changed? Have they grown? What are your lasting impressions?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. I think they've definitely grown. And I think there's a speech somewhere in my future about where would the world be without Rotary. And at the end of the day, that's what this whole journey was really about, is I was amazed to see the work that people are doing across the globe. It really did renew my faith in humanity, because all we see in the media is all the negativity, you know, the divide going on in the world, the wars, famine, drought, political unrest, etc. But when we traveled the world, the real thing that I saw was people doing amazing work and projects in their own local and global communities. So it really has changed me, and I've grown as a person, because I'm one that sometimes I can see the pragmatic things or the negative side of things, but it really did prove to me that there is so much more good in the world, that people around the globe are really good folks. The young folks are committed to service and making our world a better place, as is everyone else. And it restored, like I say, it just restored my faith in humanity, and that, like, where would our world be without our organization? It would be a much worse place, a much poorer place. You know, it's kind of swelled my heart, and it's given me a reason to be a better citizen and be a better Rotarian going forward.
Well, Nick, it's been great talking with you. Best of luck as district governor, and thanks so much for joining us today on the Rotary Voices podcast.
Pleasure. Thank you, everyone.
This episode of the Rotary Voices podcast was produced by J.P. Swenson and edited by Wen Wong, with production by Yusu Kim, and additional production by Timothy Kemp and Mike Novak. It was hosted by Jeff Johnson. Our Rotary Roundup was produced by Julia Binswanger and hosted by Linda Yu. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and share it with your friends. The Rotary Voices podcast is produced by Rotary Magazine, the official monthly publication of Rotary International. I'm Steve Edwards. Thanks for listening.